And I think we get on with the British experience, DFID experience with Brendan and Craig. There are some similarities, as you will see, but there are also some interesting differences, though. Please.
Okay, so I'm Craig Volters, research fellow at ODI. When we can you hear me all right through the mic at the moment? When we started the research, Brendan and I wanted to understand where the results agenda had come from in the British context, because there's a lot of conversations about it from quite a technical perspective. Can we measure this? Can we measure that? But we wanted to say, what are the drivers of this? How has it come to be, right? So that's the story that I'll outline for you today. And in many respects, we think it's a story of how a very influential donor has come to take on a fairly narrow reform agenda, though it is changing, and we'll talk about that. First off, then, some definitions. What is the results agenda? Why does it matter? For us, the results agenda is a political agenda for foreign aid, associated with, among other things, measurement and target setting to drive improved performance, aggregating project numbers, sort of the outputs of a project, up to a whole and releasing them as a communication to the British public. And also a much greater specificity about what projects can achieve upfront. So in your planning, you say, we will deliver, for example, 1 million women and girls with improved access to justice. I think that really matters because it has implications for how we talk about aid and about how we manage aid. So I was going to tell you the story, and then I'll leave Brendan to talk you through a little bit of what's the some of the downsides and what we think could be done differently. Worth flagging, actually, beforehand, that part of the challenge of the results agenda is that, narrowly interpreted, it goes against some of the things that we've grown to know about what makes for effective aid, whether you look at aid effectiveness principles or whether the more recent stuff around doing development differently. Some of this, all of it points to you need a significant degree of local ownership, for example. You need to be really smart about the kind of relationships you build in the country. And the question is there a cost in taking on the results-based management, which doesn't allow for that kind of work? Okay, so in case I lose you at any point during this story I'm about to tell, you can sort of follow on here, right? So this is a graph that shows the financing of aid over time and our commitment to 0.7, which we hit. And at the top, you've got the different secretaries of state. So that's the people that run the department from a political perspective in the UK, and also the permanent secretaries who manage it from a civil servant perspective, running along the bottom. And of course, the prime ministers, which you may well recognize as well. So the big shift, the kind of overarching narrative that I want to communicate to you, and I'll dig into the detail on certain parts of it, is of two decades, right? The first decade, from 1997 through to 2007, is of a kind of center-left government coming in with a pretty left-wing secretary of state who commit the department to a growing budget, to principles of contribution, partnership, country ownership, and all of the things which ended up being some of the ingredients for Paris and then Accra afterwards and the aid effectiveness agenda, right? From 2007 onwards, that began to change. Kind of the critical juncture, I suppose, is around the financial crisis and at the same time the growth of the budget. And you can see it's quite an extreme growth for British aid. Now, it should be said, I'm going to dig into the 2007 onwards bit because that's where results-based management really kicked in. But it's worth flagging that, because we're quite critical of the way it's gone, that this wasn't all roses either, right? The period from 1997 to 2007, there are real questions around the evidence for how effective aid effectiveness was, right? There was a lot of high-level panels and conferences, right? But there wasn't always enough robust evidence on the ground of how well this worked. Okay, so 2007. The political context for us, of course, is the financial crisis, increasingly. Obviously, 2008 being the point that everyone says, okay, this is where it definitely began. We had a new Secretary of State, Douglas Alexander, who comes in and, under certain public pressure as well, starts to say, we need to get a handle on what specifically British aid is delivering. So he asked his kind of civil servants and everyone beneath and his new ministerial team to say, well, let's make this happen, make this work. And what this looked like at the time was something fairly subtle, but really important for how we think about aid. So For example, log frames. They were used before. They continued to be used after 2007. But they got really beefed up. So there was kind of, it wasn't just four boxes anymore. You had to break down all of your objectively verifiable indicators into your baseline and your targets and your outputs. And everything became a lot more complicated. And that's not a bad thing, really, in the sense of planning. But importantly, the way that people were assessed through their annual review, which is the kind of yearly way that aid projects are assessed in DFID, that changed. And it was no longer an evaluation, if you like, of are you on track to achieve your outcomes, right? So sort of the high-level goals of what you're trying to get to. It was much more about have you delivered what you said you would deliver according to your plans at the start. And it sounds a bit subtle, but it's important because it means you're being held to account for things that might have needed to change, but that maybe doesn't matter so much anymore. And that was quite an important shift. Okay. In the UK, most people associate the results agenda with Andrew Mitchell, who's the chap up there, around 2010 when he came in. This was a time when we had a Conservative government come in after having a Labour government for a long time, since 1997. And he said, and this is in an interview with us as well, you know, he needed to support aid. They wanted to support aid, actually, which was different for Conservative governments. Historically, they had always taken the department and put it under the into foreign affairs, essentially, and also cut the budget. They didn't want to do that. They wanted 0.7. They wanted to commit to aid. It was a different kind of Conservative party. So the answer, in part, was the results agenda. Andrew Mitchell said to us this was a centre-right agenda for foreign aid. This is how he wanted to justify aid spending to the British people. Now, in practical terms, what that meant for people actually working on aid, and I'm thinking specifically now about DFID staff in country offices, they had to go through a process called the bilateral aid review. Essentially, what happened was the centre of government and in DFID set targets, and then the country offices had to bid for money based on how many people they could attribute to themselves as delivering on those targets. So, you know, they'd be like, the central government might say, we want X million of people with improved women and girls access to justice. And Bangladesh steps up and says, we've got 2 million, give us X amount of money. So the results agenda really became part of a process of centralising power from a development department that historically was very decentralised. Now, at the same time, ICAI was established. It's sort of ABER's kind of counterpart almost. It's the Independent Commission for Aid Impact. So Andrew Mitchell was also very committed to evidence, transparency, value for money, and all these other terms that are probably popular here too. Andrew Mitchell moved on in 2012, but in 2014, that independent department published a review which suggested that the results agenda had led to a focus on short-term efficiency over long-term sustainable outcomes. And so it was a really interesting process because the independent body set up, right, with good intentions, then came back to criticise the results agenda. Okay, just one last kind of period of time for me is the 2012 kind of through. So this is just including and then through actually to where we are today. Because what you saw there is the tensions between these agendas really playing out, right? So between the results agenda and kind of broader aid effectiveness principles. So you had on the one hand Justine Greening, Secretary of State in 2012, saying payment by results. We're going to roll that out in a big way. We will only give money if we know that the results have been delivered. And that's something that lives on today. At the same time, an internal review process took place called the end-to-end review, which surfaced a lot of the worries that DFID staff had about how this was playing out in practice. And so since then, you've had this kind of back and forth between these positions, and it hasn't played out in one specific direction. It's become quite conflicted internally, with some people wanting to work on a more learning adaptation basis and other people with more narrow results focus. Okay, so before I hand over to Brendan, there's just one more slide for me on what we take away from this as kind of broad lessons, and then Brendan will take us more into the future. The first is, and it might be obvious, but party politics has a big influence on how DFID works, and most secretaries of state have kind of attempted to somewhat puppeteer how the department is managed. And that has a big impact on how aid works, whether you think that is a positive or negative thing. Second point, role of civil servant, career and perspective. Different people within the organisation, I know that Janet has written about this from the Swedish perspective, have picked this up and ran with it, depending on their professional expertise. So these reforms, the results ones, really empowered statisticians, for example. And that has led to a rise where other people carry on with their work from, for example, from the governance perspective in slightly quieter ways now. Third point, clash of central accountability and development effectiveness. The point here is that ultimately, DFID is a government department. It's accountable to the Treasury, among other things, in the UK. The challenge has been that department has increasingly been treated as if it is a department operating in the UK with the same accountability requirements. Now, in some respect, I understand that. They're spending £13 billion a year. We need it to be accountable. The question is, what is a fit-for-purpose accountability for an international development agency working in other people's countries? And the final point I'll make before handing over to Brendan is that what we've really seen in the UK is how 0.7%, our commitment to spending 0.7% of GNI, it's protected the aid budget and lots of people campaigned for it, but it's also exposed DFID and UK aid more generally to a lot of criticism. The amount of campaign in the press against 0.7, it's a huge amount of pressure, and one of the knock-ons of that is that DFID has no choice but to continue to fight for results-based management in the way that it has, because that, as you remember rightly, is the political justification that we currently have for foreign aid. So I'll pass over to Brendan. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks very much, Craig. So I'm going to talk a little bit about some of the problems and that we see coming out of the results agenda, and then also maybe talk a little bit about where we see things going. So I think the first thing to say when thinking about what's happened under the results agenda is that it has achieved a focus within DFID and within the sector more generally on the outcomes of development. And that means away from the inputs and activities and just simply measuring spend. And we think that's a good thing. But we're also set up there three problems that we think it's caused. And that's particularly in the way that it's been implemented. So the first one is it's really sort of focused aid spending on some of the shorter term numbers rather than the sort of deeper processes and longer term processes of social change that development has traditionally been trying to achieve. And that essentially advisors have been struggling to see the wood for the trees. Even sort of where programmes are longer term, they tend to focus on shorter term numbers because that's where their reporting requirements are. And that's sort of established in a lot of the results-based management literature and new public management literature. So it's no surprise, really. Second point is that the nature of the compliance requirements that the results agenda has instituted has meant that advisors, and DFID advisors are sort of the people responsible for designing and then managing the programmes within DFID, are typically focused on London, on Whitehall. And because there's so much of their time is required funneling numbers up and sort of dealing with the various requirements that they've been set by London. And that means that it's harder for them to create the relationships that are necessary in the sort of environments in which they're working. And then the third one is simply that we think it's premised on a simple but false assumption. And that is that development can, in fact, follow a blueprint planning approach. And we think that the vast majority of programmes, that's simply not possible. So setting out numbers in advance isn't a particularly useful way of going about things. A lot of these conclusions we infer from the management starting points, but they're also to some degree backed up by our own personal experiences. And sort of an observations of the development sector in the UK. So we move on. Just want to move on a little bit to talk a little bit about some of the things that we pitched to DFID last year as ways of possibly looking at the conclusions of our report are for the for the UK aid sector and for DFID specifically. And our starting point was the belief that you basically have to take into account first and foremost the political context in which the results agenda arose, and take seriously the limits and the space that provides you for aid policy. And I think that's an obvious point, but it's not always one that's addressed in the development literature. What taking that starting point, what we did was we set out three principles. The first of all, first one of that is that the management system has to fit the breadth of what DFID's trying to do. And DFID has continued to try and do a combination of simpler, more direct projects and longer-term, deeper projects. We suggest that the results agenda fits the simpler ones better than the more complicated ones, and that the management system has to change accordingly. Provide space for accountability and learning. So a management system has to do both. It has to feed the needs of London as well as... and we also think it needs to serve the needs of the project teams. And that requires... what that means is that it doesn't necessarily require a very explicit, detailed ex-ante setting out of what results are required. We suggest that, provided that there's enough assurance to for the expenditure of public funds through the articulation of a theory of change and through the articulations of an implementation strategy, is provided there's enough there, then what becomes important is a sort of ex-post accountability and ex-post evaluation and the accountability during the implementation of the project. And that would then be able to enable programs to balance accountability and learning better, and then to sensibly compare across programs and portfolios. But I think there's a sort of maybe a broader point that I'd like to highlight, and I think really comes out of our report. Broadly. and that is to the effect that basically a results agenda is not a technical management issue, but a political one. So it's basically about, it's really important to think about, as a sector, what it is that development is trying to achieve. And we think there's been a kind of reticence in the development sector in the UK to articulate clearly some of the complexities of aid. And even using the word complexity is a little bit of a cop-out, because that's a technical term, and that by which we sort of slip the implications of political. And I think that's something that we have to grapple with, that the aid is fundamentally political. So we talk a lot about thinking and working politically, but we have to also be explicit about our own politics and how that drives our aid. So at the moment, the results agenda is really sort of integrated into what is increasingly a sort of an investment logic. It uses market language and market thinking, which is fine, but that is part of a paradigm that's moved on from the paradigm that Clare Short, for example, set out, which is much more rooted in the public sector and partnership with other state institutions in the host countries. And I think we don't necessarily address the way that these paradigms have shifted in the way that we set out policies. But I think they're extremely important, and the results agenda should be seen as part of this sort of wider shift in the paradigms that is rooted in the fact that we now have a centre-right government in the UK. This is the last point. And I think the quote that we've got up there for Andrew Mitchell sort of illustrates where that's some of that language. I think I don't want to say too much about this. What I guess I would like to stress is that in terms of our political communication, for us as a question is a wider one about how the UK engages with the rest of the world. We're at a moment now where UK foreign policy is obviously up in the air a little bit, and there's a lot of interconnected problems that the world is facing, and we're wondering whether it's possible for the development sector in the UK to start putting additional things on the table beyond simply development spending, to talk about some of the other sort of major forces of change in the world today, climate change, conflict, poverty, inequality, to put things like the arms trade, to put things like tax reform on the agenda in addition to development. And I think that's probably the final point.
Okay. Thanks a lot. All right.